Call this meeting of the House Special Committee on Energy to order. Let the record reflect that it is 10:22 a.m. on Tuesday, April 26th. Present today, we have Representative Zelkowski, Representative Rauscher, Representative Kaufman, and myself, Chair Shiragi. Others on the way. And if everyone could please remember to silence their cell phones, it would be appreciated. I want to thank our House Records Secretary, Karen Paulson Edwards, and our LIO moderator, Lydia Klein, for helping us with behind-the-scenes work in our committee today. Today we'll bring House Bill 301, Renewable Portfolio Standard, back before the committee. We will consider adoption of a committee substitute, take invited testimony, and then finish with public testimony. Any questions or comments from the committee before we get underway? Wonderful. Not seeing any. Vice Chair Zelkowski, do you have a motion for the committee?
I move to adopt the committee substitute for House Bill 301, version 32-GH2546-G as the committee's working document.
Okay, wonderful. And I'm going to object just for the purposes of a walkthrough of changes. With that, I'd like to turn to my staff, Ryan Johnston. Thanks for coming up to the table. If you could please walk us through the changes made in the committee substitute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, Ryan Johnston, staff representative Calvin Shiragi. All the members should have a summary of changes, and I'm just going to walk through. So page one, lines one through three, the title was amended to now read for a clean energy standard, and then also adds relating to the Alaska Energy Authority and clean energy projects. There's a section later in the bill that was added explicitly for the Alaska Energy Authority, so that is just a conforming change for that. And then, just so I save some time for the committee, I'm not going to read all 27 times that the renewable portfolio standard was replaced with clean energy standard, but that was a change made throughout the bill. So now it is a clean energy standard instead of a renewable portfolio standard. Page one, lines 9 through 11, after energy resources, adds to the purpose section of the bill in order to minimize costs to consumers, increase stability for economic development, maximize grid resiliency, and minimize the state's carbon emissions. Page 2, line 8, amends subsection B to be more in line with the utility industry language when it comes to these kinds of ancillary services. Page 3, line 20 through 22, the previous version of the bill had 4 benchmark dates. The current CS now has three benchmark dates, 25% by December 31st, 2030, 55% by December 31, 2040, and 80% by December 31, 2050, effectively making the compliance periods 10 years instead of 5.
And let the record reflect that Representative Klayman joined us at 10:25 a.m.
Page 4, lines 6 through 11. Adds a new section to AS 4205-900 that would allow for the construction that has begun prior to the end of a compliance period to be counted towards fulfilling the clean energy standard if the project will begin providing energy no later than 2 years after the compliance period or an end of a period determined by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Page 4, line 21, adds a new section to AS 4205-900 whereby a load-serving entity may satisfy the clean energy standard using the sale of clean energy credits. That was not in the previous version, but Ledge Legal determined that should be in this section and not just in a separate section of the bill, so it's more or less a conforming change from Ledge Legal. Page 4, line 23, adds a new section to AS 4205-900 that a project located on state lands receives an exemption from state lease fees for a period of 10 years, and that is from when the project construction is begun. Page 5, lines 9 through 21, amends the previous energy credit system into a clean energy credits. A clean energy credit may only be used once. A credit may be used to comply with the clean energy standard without the purchase or use of the electrical generation from which the credit is derived, and that energy has to be derived in the state of Alaska, must be generated here in the state of Alaska. So now on to page 6, line 24. After commission, change the word from may to shall. Page 7, lines 3 through 7. Amends the previous exemption section to a single exemption. The new exemption states that if the whole rail belt achieves the clean energy standard for that compliance period, then the individual load serving entities are exempt. Page 7, lines 9 through 16, adds the definition of a clean energy credit. Again, this just conforms with the previous section. Page 7, lines 17 through 19, amends the previous definition of renewable energy standard and reordered it in the definition section. Ledge Legal, when we had the CS done, has their own drafting standards, so they brought this renewable definition into conforming with their standards. So that was the reason for that change. Page 7, line 20. Amends the compliance period to a 10-year period to align with the benchmarks suggested earlier in the bill. Page 8, line 2, the definition of renewable energy resource was cleaned up by legislative legal to be more in line with the drafting standards. Page 8, line 15, adds a new subsection to AS 49-83940. This new subsection would require that the Alaska Energy Authority provide a report to the legislature every 2 years on the progress of developing renewable and clean energy resources in rural parts of the state of Alaska. And then page 8, lines 25 through 27, the regulations language for the original or in the original version of the bill had extra language that our alleged legal determined was not necessary for the RCA to implement regulations for this bill. So this section was just cleaned up by alleged legal to conform with their drafting standards. And that concludes the summary of changes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Johnston. Representative Kaufman.
Thank you. Through the chair, question on starting from the end, going back. So page 8, line 15, The report to the legislature every 2 years on the progress of developing renewable and clean energy resources in rural parts of the state. Does this provide for a general report on overall progress performance?
Through the chair, Ryan Johnston, staff representative, Shragi, Representative Kaufman, in our discussions with AEA and several other members, there was consensus that there's quite a bit of research on the rail belt itself, and a lot of resources are devoted to the rail belt, hence the bill you see before you in House Bill 301. So those efforts ongoing, this would be in supplement of that to expressly ask for that kind of focus on rural Alaska.
Thank you. A separate line of question. Through the chair to Mr. Johnston, where the phrase renewable energy standard or resource is in there. So as the bill has taken a focus more on clean energy rather than renewable, can you just characterize how those terms are being used within the bill as written?
So renewable resources, or through the chair, Representative Kaufman, renewable resources definition was not changed to a clean resource because, in our mind, renewable can be adjusted through the definition. So keeping renewable in the way it is now was done as an attempt to potentially, if any other kinds of energy generation wanted to be included in renewable, as long as it somewhat passed the red face test, would be allowable. But to your point, expressly on page 7, lines 17 through 19, the clean energy standard, that's expressly talking about AS 29-4205-900. So that one had to be changed because it very much relates to that section of statute.
Thank you.
Follow-up, Representative Kaufman?
A separate line of questioning. thank you. Through the chair to Mr. Johnston. So page 4, lines 6 through 11, you noted that the construction you know, basically grandfathered in as long as it comes online no later than 2 years. I was just curious what would happen if they did not, if through some construction delays or permitting delays, we're not able to close within that window.
Through the chair, Representative Coffin, that's covered in the bill in the on page 5, line 22, that non-compliance fine waiver. That kind of event would potentially be covered under these events and circumstances that are outside of the load-serving entity's reasonable control and may include. So, yes, it's very possible that in all avenues in good faith, the utility was doing their utmost to get that project or get that contract with an independent power producer signed within that two-year period, or the independent power producer themselves is trying to get the project off the ground in the two-year period. But, like you said, it could be a construction, could be just like we saw with COVID. It very well could be it's a hard morning, Mr. Chair.
Resource
supply chain issues. There we go. So, but under this section on page 5 and 6, that should cover those kinds of things before the RCA. The utility themselves would be able to present the case to the utility of, hey, we tried, we did our best, but we couldn't fall within a 2-year window. And that's also why there is the time period determined by the RCA for that exact kind of situation.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, we're going to go to Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you, the chair. I was just wondering, the title change all the way through the bill, we would talk about renewable portfolio standard now being called the clean energy standard. It just thinking back on all the meetings that we've had on this so far, it seemed like renewable portfolio standard, we called it RPS, okay, was used probably nationally. And if I'm mistaken, I believe it was used nationally. So are we kind of stepping away from something that we would be looking at nationally now and developing our own? Or what are we doing here? I just want to understand. I may sound ignorant, but I appreciate if we understood it.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher. No, absolutely. Before this bill hit my desk, I didn't really know all that much about RPS or CES myself. So, no, the Clean Energy Standard is a form of standard that's used across the United States. I can get you an exact number. There are several states that I found in my reading that have both an RPS and a Clean Energy Standard. So it's a dealer's choice for states, and I can get you the exact breakdown.
Okay. All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Other comments or questions from the committee before we adopt the CS? Representative Kaufman.
Through the chair to Ms. Johnson. So under the clean energy standard, do you have a list of all the various energy production methods that are considered clean or cleaner than others?
Through the chair, Representative Kaufman, I don't have one with me at this moment, but I can definitely provide one to the committee. And it's the usual gambit we've heard before in this committee. So as long as it's not carbon emitting, there's a good case that it could fall under a clean energy standard. Yes, sir.
Very good. Further comments or questions before we adopt the committee substitute? Not seeing any. I'm going to remove my objection. Is there further objection to adopting the CS? Not hearing any objection, we have adopted the CS. We're now going to move over to invited testimony, and I apologize to those in the room and those online that we're on such a tight schedule today with not a ton of time for testimony, but we appreciate you being here and look forward to hearing what you have to present. To start us off here today in the room, we have Mr. Brian Hickey, Chief Operating Officer at Chugach Electric Association. And online, we have Daniel Heckman, Regulatory Analyst at Golden Valley Electric Association, Julie Etze, Director of External Affairs at Matanuska Electric Association, and Kieran Baker, Director of Member Relations at Homer Electric Association. Thank you all for being with us today. Mr. Hickey, I understand you'll be running point from the room. If you would like to put yourself on the record and take it away, we're going to run until we hear bells for floor. So we'll get as much in as we can, hopefully all of it, but we are on a pretty tight schedule here. Please, again, put yourself on the record and go ahead and get us
kicked off.
Sure. Thank you very much. My name is Brian Hickey, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Chugach Electric Association. I'm here speaking on behalf of the five rail belt utilities, and as noted by Chairman Shragi, my colleagues are online and can answer questions if required. Chair Shragi, members of the committee, thank you for taking our testimony today. Hopefully our testimony will be brief and follow the written comments that we forwarded to you on April 5th. Hopefully we can provide some context for those comments. First of all, we believe that the purpose section that you all have drafted in the current CS is well written and clear, and actually lays out our shared goals on what an RPS should be that is sustainable and actually can be made into reality. Those are to minimize costs. We see that as keeping our members' rates as low as practical, providing price stability, which allows for economic growth. Maximizing grid resiliency, we see that both from a fuel perspective as well as a system reliability perspective, and minimizing carbon emissions. And although the grid is a relatively small producer of carbon in the state at about 7%, it is a key or critical component to decarbonizing the rest of the economy. So we think it's a very important step forward, and we appreciate your leadership in that. We'd also like to thank the committee for adopting a number of the comments that we put in. And one thing we have noted numerous times and want to reiterate here is that, you know, we have spent a great deal of time and energy developing the Electric Reliability Organization. That's an inclusive, independent, and extensive organization that will develop integrated resource plans. And we believe that is the appropriate venue for validating and setting values for clean energy targets that actually are achievable.
And really quickly going to interrupt to note that Representative Fields joined us at 10:39 a.m. Thank you. Please continue.
Given our shared vision on the successful of what a successful RPS might look like, we would like to reiterate to the committee some of the modifications that we as stewards of the rail belt grid believe are cornerstones of a successful RPS. First, we believe there needs to be some language that provides for caps on rate increases and assures reliability. We believe that it has to include provisions that allows the RCA to modify or extend or waive certain portions of the RPS if they find that either from a financial or reliability perspective, the execution of the RPS is not in the public interest. And that's our most important goal here. So I wanted to make that clear that the utilities are united in that. Our second priority is that fines that are incurred must actually be includable in rates, because as cooperatives, we have no other sources of funds. All the funds that we have come from the ratepayers, either through base rates, fuel and purchase power, or reductions in returned capital credits. So the membership pays one way or the other, and there just is no other source of money. So we believe that fines must be recoverable in rates. We also believe that those fines should be used to improve infrastructure in the rail belt region. And to the degree that utilities are attempting to improve infrastructure that allows for renewable or clean energy, to the degree that they are making those improvements, there should be credits to those fines. So if we're building the Southern Intertie for $200 or $300 million, we should get credit for that. So I think that's our second priority. Our third priority is making certain that the target dates align with the orderly retirement of our existing assets. You know, most of the existing generating plants will be fully depreciated by late 2056, 58, depending on how things shake out. So we believe that the target should align with the retirement of those assets. I know for the Chugach system alone, you know, the annual depreciation value is between $11 and $15 million. So for the two big plants, that's not all of our plants, but that's just the Sullivan plant and the SPP plant. So aligning those targets with the time frames that allow us to retire those units off the books prevents stranded assets. It prevents us from having to find a way to pay down that debt, and it allows us to construct the new assets without doubling up on the cost to the ratepayers, which goes directly back to your first the first bullet in the purpose. So we think that's an important add. The fourth priority is the extension of the 10-year cap on state land lease fees. We believe there's a long history of utility assets being placed in state on state land in state right-of-ways. We think it would be incongruent for the generating plant that is making the electricity to have to pay state lease fees while the lines that distribute that generator to the consumers are not charged that because they're located within the state right-of-ways based on permitting fees. So we believe that that's an important add. And finally, we believe that a careful review on a periodic basis of the list of allowable clean energy standards or clean energy technologies would keep us on the cutting edge of what is possible and what is doable. We believe that over the next decade, there will be significant progress in the development of site-specific carbon capture, direct carbon capture, hydrogen, small nuclear. And we believe that there should be a requirement that that list be analyzed by a third party and updated and required to be updated with proven technologies. And to that point, we did find, and I think the questions from Representative Kaufman may have cleared this up, but we felt like the term renewable energy throughout the document should be changed to clean energy. And we say that because we believe that in the not-too-distant future, things like site-specific carbon capture and reinjection will be a technology that actually moves us in the direction we all want to go, and it supports the purpose statement of the document. And finally, the two-year time frame for development of an asset, while that might work for smaller solar and hydro projects, smaller solar and wind projects. For larger hydroelectric projects, that time frame is just not, we're currently looking at developing the Dixon Creek project, which will be a linchpin for us meeting the 2030 target. But the current estimate today, without any preliminary work being done, is that, with the least amount of preliminary work being done, is that that's at least a 10-year project to get that licensed and put in place. So we think for hydroelectric projects, there needs to be a different standard. And so there's that. Moving quickly along here so I don't bog this down, we want to reemphasize that significant transmission investment will be required to create renewable energy or clean energy projects throughout the state. Clean energy projects, particularly in the form of wind, solar, and hydro, are very location dependent. Currently, between the northern region, which is the Golden Valley area, the central region, which is Chugach and Matanuska Electric, and the Kenai region, there are single transmission lines. They are both limited at roughly 80 megawatts, between 75 and 80 megawatts. That is 10% of our peak load. So we are, at the current time, only able to transfer 10% of our peak load between regions. So there will have to be significant transmission investment. If we have looked at those numbers, and they're somewhere in that $2 to $2.5 billion range. Those numbers are beyond the capabilities of the financial they're beyond the capabilities of the five utilities without significant rate increases. So to that end, we're actively seeking federal financing or federal infrastructure dollars to help us with that. One of the things we do want to emphasize is that it's critical that this year that AEA received the receipt authority in House Bill 414 and Senate Bill 241 so that they are able to receive those funds and begin to staff up to actually work some of these grant projects that will be coming out of DOD next year. So we're actively pursuing that. And we believe that in addition to the federal funds and the utility funds, which we will contribute, there will probably have to be some state contributions to build out a transmission system that's adequate to move clean energy from one end of the grid to the other. So in conclusion, I want to thank you again for our opportunity to testify. We believe that the priority amendments that we've listed here solidly support the purpose statement of the document. We appreciate your and they also allow us to fulfill our obligations to our membership. And so they are necessary for the utilities to support a clean energy standard. We appreciate your forward-looking focus in establishing a clear energy policy for the state of Alaska. We believe it's time, and we need that. And as the key stakeholders and stewards of the grid and the assets that our membership have built, we look forward to working with you and having continued conversations and coming to a place where we can develop something that's sustainable and implementable and something that we can work on over the next decades. And if that's all I have, so if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Hickey. I really appreciate taking the time to provide some feedback, especially on such short notice. I know we just got the committee substitute out this last week. I know we do have questions, but in respect to our invite or our public testimony today, I'd like to go to public testimony. I understand Representative Brauscher has to depart at this time. And I know that we all have your contact information, Mr. Hickey, as well as for your associates. So to the extent we don't have time to get our questions in today, I know that members will be able to work with you to get those questions answered offline. So with that in mind, I'd like to go to public testimony now. We're going to open public testimony on HB 301. And first up for public testimony, we have Chris Rose, Executive Director at REAP. Please put yourself on the record, begin with your testimony, and if possible, restricting testimony to 2 minutes would be appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chris Rose. I'm the Executive Director of Renewable Energy Alaska Project, or REAP. We're a statewide organization that's been working for about the last 18 years to promote renewable energy and energy efficiency. We've been following this bill from the beginning. We have a lot of comments, particularly in response to Mr. Hickey's testimony that we just heard. But generally speaking, support this legislation and appreciate all the work the committee has been doing on it. We do have some very specific concerns. In particular, we believe that 2050 is too far out for there to be really any immediate movement toward more renewable energy in the rail belt grid. As the National Renewable Energy Laboratory study pointed out, we can get it to 80% by 2040 without any impact on reliability and without actually having to retire any of the plants that Mr. Hickey was referring to early. Those plants will continue to play a part in the grid as we move toward more and more renewable energy because we will be using them from time to time, but just much less. And the point here is that we will be saving money on natural gas fuel. We're relying in the rail belt now on some of the most expensive natural gas in North America, twice as much as the lower 48 gas. And the point of putting more renewable energy into the grid is that the plants that already exist don't have to burn that fuel, which means that consumers are going to pay less. So there's a real concern that 2050 is too far out. Without the 2025 deadline, I think it relieves a lot of the urgency that we would otherwise want to see in this first integrated resource plan that the Electric Reliability Organization hopefully will be able to do in the next 2 or 3 years. So we're a little bit concerned about that. Also concerned about the title change, frankly. We refer to renewable energy throughout the document, throughout the CS, but now the title has changed, and yet the definition of renewables is the same, and there is no definition of clean energy. There's a little bit of confusion from our perspective on where the clean energy credit can come from. There's a reference in one section, 910, to credits being produced in the state, and yet there's also another reference in the definition of the clean energy credits that make it sound like those credits actually have to be derived from renewable energy that's in the interconnected network that has a RPS applicable to it. We do not believe in Section 4205.915A that a 20-megawatt fine is high enough to incentivize action. The national average is about $50 a megawatt hour, so we'd like to see that raised. We also believe that while the exemption in 4205.920 that allows the utilities to comply as a unit, it generally is a good thing because it will encourage collaboration. I think it does raise questions about the clean energy credit market and the price. In other words, what incentive might a utility have to be part of meeting the standard if it sees that other utilities in the network are planning projects that are large enough for the whole region to meet that standard? And therefore to allow for the exemption. I'll just address a couple of the other things that I heard today from Mr. Hickey very quickly, and we could also submit some written comments. As I mentioned, we don't believe there's any reason to align these dates with the retirement dates of the current plants, because those plants can continue to operate when necessary. The real object there is to reduce the amount of fuel that the region burns. We would support extending the lease fee waiver, but that brings up another issue, which is that not all of these projects are necessarily going to have to be built by the utility. In fact, there's a whole private sector out there that generates 40% of all the electricity in the United States called independent power producers, and they would like to also participate in this. And so I think that waiver we have to make sure that waiver extends to any renewable energy project, not just a project that's built by the incumbent utilities.
And Mr. Rose, if I could ask you to leave it there. I know that we are on an expedited schedule today, so sorry to cut you off. If you could please send additional comments and or reiterate any of those in written testimony, we would greatly appreciate it. I know that we have three other individuals online for public testimony. I would like to next go to Ms. Jen Miller, CEO of Renewable Independent Power Producers. If you could please put yourself on the record and begin with your testimony, limiting yourself to 2 minutes. Thank you.
Chair Sharney and House Energy Committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 301. My name is Jen Miller, and I'm the CEO of Renewable IPP, Independent Power Producers. Our company develops, constructs, and operates utility-scale solar farm projects in Alaska and is responsible for the largest solar farm in the state in Willow, and we are embarking on one 6 times its size in Houston. We are the first IPP on the rail belt to agree and get RCA approval for 2 power purchase agreements. I'd like to recognize Madawaska Electric Association, who is instrumental in making this possible. The key to our success has been collaborative and transparent working style with utilities. The energy transition is a change for everyone, and no one entity has all the answers, but together we can find solutions that enable a safe and reliable transition. The Houston Solar Farm project has taken 3 years of careful planning and analysis to bring cost savings and reliable renewable energy to the rail belt. I strongly support House Bill 301 and Alaska having a clean energy standard because we must begin with the end in mind, and House Bill 301 sets that clear vision with strong commitment. I think we all know that human nature is to procrastinate or at the very least focus on the here and now. Our current clean energy goal of 50% by 2025, which does not have strong enough commitment, is quickly passing us by, and that's why we need a clean energy standard. As legislators, Alaskans look to you to set the long-term vision for this state. We need a clear roadmap for which we want electricity generation to transition from where we want it to be in 2040 or 2050, and that goal must be set today, much like putting the man on the moon by the end of the decade. I've read the bill in detail and would like to offer a few comments for your consideration. The first is just clarifying the definition of a clean energy credit. Currently, generation or purchase of clean electricity by the megawatt hour may count as a clean energy credit. This is problematic because our power purchase agreement sets the ownership rights of those clean energy credits. And for example, in Willow and Houston, those contracts split the clean energy credits 50-50 between the system owner and the utility. The clean energy credit ownership split informs how the pricing that's in the power purchase agreement and how the project is funded. And so it's critical to honor what's in that power purchase agreement. And so the definition should include that the load-serving entity must have the ownership rights of those clean energy credits for them to be counted.
And Ms. Miller, we've got bells for floor, so I'm going to have to cut you off there. If you could please send in your testimony in writing, it would be greatly appreciated. Next up,
thank you
very much, Ms. Miller. Next up, we're going to go to Ms. Erin McKittrick. If you could please put yourself on the record and begin with your testimony, no more than 2 minutes. Thank you.
Hello, I'm Erin McKittrick from Soldovia. I want to say that I support the RPS. I'd encourage the committee, in fact, to move back to the original timeline and keep the energy level to ensure progress happens. I think a rapid and decisive move towards renewable energy is very important for Alaska. I also think to get there, the utilities need to work together. There's been a lot of effort recently to increase coordination between the rail belt utilities, why we have an ERO now tasked with coming up with a common resource plan. The NREL study that looked at the feasibility of the 80% standard emphasized the importance of transmission upgrades, as did utility testimony today. but transmission barriers aren't only physical. Stacked up wheeling rates between the utilities create a barrier to using the transmission we have now to efficiently implement renewable energy. We could potentially build quite a bit of renewable energy before we string any new lines. For example, SERI has wind resources at Fire Island, and AEA just recommended funding both Homer Electric and Golden Valley's grant request to look for wind on their two ends of the system. Maybe it will end up making sense to combine forces on one larger project in what turns out to be the best spot. But the stacked up wheeling rates from all the entities in between mean that that probably won't make sense. The need for a unified transmission tariff on the rail belt has been talked about many times before. And all the efforts to establish an ERO and now this clean energy standard, I think this is the one key puzzle piece that's been forgotten. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kittrick. Next up, we're going to go to Mr. Matthew Perkins with Alaska Renewables. If you could please put yourself on the record and begin with your testimony. We've got just exactly 2 minutes left here on committee.
Great. Yeah, this is Matt Perkins, CEO of Alaska Renewables. I have my timer up here, so I'll try to do it. Thank you all. Alaska Renewables is an Alaska-based team working to develop near-term utility-scale renewable projects in Alaska. We're an engineering and economics-based firm. We're committed to community dialogue and engagement to ensure that the public benefits directly from our projects. We focus on commercially available technologies today, and having spent most of my career at GE and then in the venture capital space, we have a very keen understanding of what's real versus what's experimental. Our team members have developed and built over 2 gigawatts of renewable power plants in Canada and the United States. We have more than 4 gigawatts additional under development around the world, in particular in islanded grids like New Zealand and other places that reflect markets like Alaska. We've engaged with the majority of the rail belt electric utilities and have deeply studied the cost-effective integration of renewables in the years to come and found it to both increase system reliability and decrease member costs. As consumers around the world vote with their pocketbook for lowering carbon emissions, we believe that renewable energy at scale will make Alaska businesses more globally competitive. And as energy costs in Alaska are among the highest in the world, we believe that lowering system costs and eliminating fuel volatility with use of renewables is a win for Alaska communities directly. Very quickly, I want to say we believe the bill is a terrific step in the right direction. We encourage its passage. Low-cost renewables are here today. Jen has showed that. Others have shown that. We encourage earlier adoption of the targets to bring the cost benefit to the rail belt today. We don't see this as an either-or between the existing assets and new renewables. The existing assets are terrific utilities for integrating wind. They're sunk capital that can serve a terrific purpose in supporting that integration. I want to echo many of Brian's comments. And our view is, as he said, new transmission will be required. We believe, as Aaron said, that you can get to about 200 megawatts of new renewables without new transmission. To get beyond that, new transmission would be required. And I would only add finally that in addition to federal, state, and member sources of funds for that new transmission, private capital should be available as well. I want to finally echo Jen and Aaron's comments specifically with respect to unified transmission cost.
Thank you very much.
The committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Perkins. Yeah. I'm sorry to cut you off, but we've got to run the floor. Really appreciate your testimony. Thank you for providing it today. With that, I'm going to close public testimony. And House Energy is adjourned at 11:01 a.m. Thank you.